I really love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Fat Man.
But did you know that you could perhaps kill somebody?
Yes, but I wanted to do horror stuff with my friend.
Luro.
You're my boy, Blue.
You're my boy.
And Marvel 2K.
How do I reach these kids?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Fat Man. You're listening to 128 of Comic Conversations, where we talk all things comics for the week of January 20, 2016. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Marvel2K and Luro. Luro, how are you doing tonight? What were you going to say?
Yeah. What?
You were saying something right before I interrupted you in the intro.
I was? Yeah. I don't remember. I'm good.
And Marvel2K.
I'm fine.
All right, let's go into our first segment, as always, news. Second week in a row that we actually have some worthwhile news to talk about. The first,
some more than others.
Yeah, I know. We've had weeks. I mean, last week was the first time in a long time that we actually had news, and now we're keeping the trend going with this week actually having some comic book news as well.
A lot of it was the holiday week, you know, the holiday weeks. You know,
they ain't gonna announce nothing then.
Yeah, and then there'd be news, but it'd be like, you know, movie or TV stuff, and we rarely, if ever, cover that.
It wasn't anything big, yeah. They were never gonna announce anything big during those.
Well, we've got some catch up, and we got some big news. Above all which, I'm sure Marvel's thrilled with, we have the return of Steve Rogers to current Marvel continuity, in the sense that he's young again.
Yeah, he's gonna be Captain America. Steve Rogers, but they're still going to have Captain America.
Yeah. That's the interesting part of this story, is that they're keeping Sam Wilson, Captain America, who I think it's safe to say has failed. It's been a failure. He sucks. Like,
but I'm still of the opinion they didn't give it a full college try, but with that said, yeah. It's
Spencer's
a failure.
Fault. 100% Spencer's fault. I'm disappointed that...
And reading the Steve Rogers book, too.
Yeah, I don't want Nick Spencer to write Captain America, I think is my problem.
Yeah, he sort of plays him out to be a joke, and it's like, it's fine when you're doing that with, like, characters with Ant-Man, but when you're doing it with what they're trying to make the new Cap, it's like, not much care for.
You know what the real problem with it is? I just want Brubaker to write it. And the thing of it is, like, he's off doing his Image stuff. Like, I'm sure he has absolutely no interest. He's like... Okay, I wrote Captain America for like 5 years. Like,
I had the best run since ever, and like, yeah, I don't want to come back now.
I did everything I wanted to do, and the run was great, so like, I don't need to come back. But it's like, dude, you can come back and keep writing it. Like, it's okay. I'd be fine if Grant Morrison came back and wanted to write X-Men. Like, I don't care that you already did.
They should have the best writers that did, you know, or most closely associated with certain characters, and then just have them write runs till the end of time.
Yeah, your best run, you should always write it. Peter David writes books for like 10 years. I don't know why everybody else can't.
It's funny, with that said, I wouldn't mind if they gave Spider-Man to somebody else besides Slott.
Oh, by the way, he wrote Captain America 7 years.
Okay, see? So he's probably like, I'm done. I've said everything I want.
Seven, almost eight.
Well, he could come back because Cap hadn't really been lighting the world on fire without him. I mean, you know, Steve Rogers come back and be exciting. And I don't say Spencer can't write a different... In fact, I almost guarantee he will write it with a different tone, just because it doesn't make any sense to have two semi-comedy books with characters who have the same name. But, you know...
Yeah.
Whatever. The only reason they're doing this is because he didn't get Sam Wilson over, and the only reason Sam Wilson didn't get over... is because of the way he wrote him.
He treated him like a jobber. It was a joke. He made him a werewolf into one issue, which was fine, but then he kept doing it, and this is what, our third, fourth issue now? That he's
still a
werewolf?
Fucking werewolf. 5 issues in.
Wow. And here's the thing. At this point, I feel like I'm a broken record, but, you know, he started off really strong. He had, like, an idea of the sense that, you know, he was going to make Cap his own. He was going to go, you know, make Cap his own ideal. But then he just very quickly, just because I don't know if this is what Spencer does, but he made him a joke.
Relaunch, remember, he was writing Sam Wilson before they relaunched to a new number one.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing fine before that.
I thought Remainder...
gimmick. It's like people came out and they, you know, you had like Fox News talking about like fucking, oh, Captain Communist, rah, rah. And that didn't increase sales.
But I liked it in the sense that he was doing something different with the character.
No, but I'm saying you got some press on it, and then you completely dropped it.
Yeah, and then you went in a completely different direction and tried to make the character a joke. And it's like
it's still there, but even that, the thing that made him different has been it's just played up for comedy now. And like even your villain is kind of goofy.
Yeah, he's so, you know what that villain reminds me of, the Viper? He reminds me of one of those Captain Planet villains that are like.
Yeah. And I mean, had Sam That's Wilson good. had they gone stronger with the political thing, that would have made sense as a villain. But after that first issue, like he doesn't really come out strongly that way, so it weakens it. It's like he's fighting a goofy evil capitalist who isn't as good as the goofy evil capitalist from Thor. So what, like? And I still read it because it's kind of fun, but it's you got to get that guy over, and you didn't, so now they're making you bring Steve Rogers back. Because I guarantee it's not his – he didn't go and be like, okay, we got to bring Steve Rogers back. That's not what happened. Marvel's like, okay, we have to bring Steve Rogers back. We got a movie coming out.
Yeah, I think that's most of it. Some of it is obviously that 75th Captain America thing, but that's already come and gone. But I'm sure when that movie comes back, I'm sure that's when they're going to bring Steve back.
Yeah, but by calling both books Captain America, you are making the Sam Wilson one lesser just by having Captain America Steve Rogers. By its existence, he's the Uber Cap.
You know, with having these two books, I suspect that what we're going to see is, once they do the new number one for Captain America, that one's going to sell a lot. I think this one is going to outsell the Sam Wilson one by at least 15,000 on average, and I think the Sam Wilson Captain America will stay below 30,000.
Well, because how can you justify keeping it around? Like, why do you need two caps?
The people who already want to read Cap are going to read the Steve Rogers
one. In fact, the whole reason that he's Captain America is because Cap couldn't be Cap anymore, and he had to put someone in its place, and it made sense for him to pick Sam Wilson. But if he's going to be Cap again, then why can't Sam Wilson be Falcon?
Yeah, like, but I think there's even talk about having maybe a storyline where even, what's his name, puts the Captain America mask back on, Bucky. It may be a thing going forward.
He's going to be Thunderbolts.
Yeah, and he's Winter Soldier in that.
Maybe that's just a one-off then. Because I think I specifically remember seeing, a cover where they had Old Man Steve Rogers.
It could have just been a special anniversary cover.
Yeah, true.
Let's talk about Thunderbolts then, since that was our other story. They teased a new Thunderbolts book, and they slowly revealed the characters, which was kind of, clever. But then they revealed all the characters, and I'm like, oh, it's a bunch of fucking jobbers. I don't care.
Yeah, and of course their leader that you're referring to is Bucky, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, who's the most mainline character. It's Bucky, the fucking Fixer.
Atlas.
Mach 5 or whatever his name is. Yeah. Who we last saw as a fucking goofy jobber and
he couldn't jump out the window.
Yeah. So it's not exactly. I mean, Thunderbolts, it doesn't need to be an A-list team. The only reason I was really disappointed was in that Marvel Now thing we got are all new, all different when they were advertising it. They showed Citizen V, who has not appeared at all, and I thought, well, they're doing Thunderbolts, so they'll bring him back. Doesn't have to be Zemo, but they're bringing him back. Well, apparently they changed their minds.
No, and apparently with what I hear, he's going to be the main villain that Civil War movies. Apparently he's going to be a full-blown heel turn, so whatever arc he had in that, I guess, is very quickly going to go away.
The original Thunderbolt story was he pretended to be a good guy. Thunderbolts was during Heroes Reborn, right, Marvel?
Reborn?
Yeah, when they had when all the heroes disappeared.
Oh no, but I mean, was it that long ago?
I think it was original Thunderbolts. They came in and they were a team because all the heroes had disappeared. And then at the end of the first issue, you found out it was Zemo. He was always a bad guy. He was, but the other characters, some of them turned face. But, I personally think, and I know a lot of people got some love for later Thunderbolts runs. I never really liked it after the original, not even the original run, after the original story arc. I never really liked Thunderbolts, so I'm not overly excited about this, but Marvel seems to be giving them somewhat of a push, so.
I'll give it a shot. I mean,
you're right. It was after Heroes Reborn. It was 97. What was that long ago?
Horror.
Okay. With that said, like I said, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'll still give it a chance. I'll still read it.
Kurt Busiek was the writer on that.
yeah, because he hadn't done Avengers yet.
Yeah, Bagley was doing art.
Yeah, because he did Avengers when Avengers came back, I think. So that was his famous Avengers run that I that I famously on the internet read and said, this is shit. Why do people like the Avengers? Because fucking Silver Claw and 3D Man or whatever is Triathlon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is fucking Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Whatever. I'm over at DC reading fucking Superman and Batman teaming up and you guys got Silver Claw and Triathlon.
The run was actually good, though. I'm just saying.
No, I know that, and I've always intended to go back and read it. And the thing was, he built it correctly. He did a lot to introduce those characters since they were new characters. But from my perspective, I'm reading this and I'm going, who the fuck are these jobbers they keep talking about? I want to read about Captain America and Iron Man. Not that Captain America and Iron Man were the most over characters at the time, but they were better than Silver Claw. Our other news story might not even be a story.
No, there's rumors apparently DC is going to do another relaunch. This is on the heels of, and now this is, the tease of this is this summer. So literally this is something that they did last summer, and apparently they're teasing, or there's some, I guess, some speculation. I think that's the proper term. Allegedly, yep, they're going to be doing a relaunch with, you know, a lot of their main titles that, you know, that more coincide with what they're going to do with all stuff in the movies.
Here's what we know. DC, Jim Lee and Dan DiDio, I don't know how to say his name. There you go, bud. Jack wanted some candy. they tweeted out a thing. It was a picture and it just said Rebirth. And everybody jumped on this and they're like, oh my God, DC's doing a relaunch again. DC hasn't said that. Now, the funny thing is, they tweeted this out to get some buzz going on something.
Mm-hmm.
But every news story I read was DC following their falling sales. Like, everything talked about how DC's books are selling shit after the new 52. So they tried to put something out to build some excitement, and all it did was it caused every comic website to talk about how their sales suck. So we assume they're doing a relaunch again, which I don't think is what DC intended. And the other thing is, we're going to hit a point here, all these relaunches, where it stops working.
Yeah, but until we get to that point, they're going to keep doing it. I mean, Marvel's consistently been doing it for year after year after year, and it's shown that it works.
They've only done one. I mean, this recent one with Secret Wars, that's the first real line-wide relaunch they've done.
Yeah, but every year you've seen it. They've gone from, what, Marvel Now to all new different Marvel.
Yeah, but those are relaunches. Those are
renumbering?
Renumbering, rebranding, I guess.
Yeah, but this was their first ever, like, actual line-wide relaunch. And even that was kind of, you know, a lot of this stuff, nothing changed, so whatever. DC has done this multiple times. They've been doing the same thing Marvel was. They did, like, the DCU and shit, and, you know, it didn't work, but they've been doing stuff. If they actually do another line-wide relaunch, that's going to be ridiculous, because the big ones...
Well, with that said, this could be just a rebranding like Marvel just brought up earlier. It could be just, you know, a renumbering, rebranding. It may not be something in the sense that what they did earlier last year. It could be just something where they're just going to have a bunch of new number ones and they're more or less going to keep the same people in the same direction.
Which is what I hope it is. Now, what DC does need to do is, because they do have some talent, the problem with the new 52 was... You had way too many books. You had way too many books no one cared about. But the bigger problem was they didn't even have all their top tier talent on it because they had people who were really good working on that before Watchmen bullshit when they should have had them working on new 52 titles. So you started off on a wrong foot. That's why it fell off. It's because your creative teams weren't strong enough. What I hope this is, instead of a line-wide relaunch, DC takes all their top characters, they put top creative teams on them, and then, you know, off to the races. that would be the best thing to do. I don't know what they're going to do, though, because we have so little information. It's just everyone talking.
Yeah, it's all hearsay. It's all alleged. So I guess as the weeks go on, we get closer to the summer, we'll get probably some more information.
Hopefully.
Yes. All right. With that said, we're done with news. Let's move on to our next segment, the lightning round.
Danger, danger.
All right, for this week, we have Astro City and Wrath of the Eternal Warrior. Again, stuff we're going to read and do a normal review, but we decided to bump up and do a lightning round review. Astro City, Lurl didn't get around to reading this week, which is a damn shame, because I absolutely love this week's Astro City.
Yeah, I forgot. I got nothing against the book. I had everything ready to read, and I somehow missed it.
Well, I think Marvel wasn't too keen on the book, though. Right, Marvel?
Nah, it wasn't not that high. It was fine, but I didn't really like it that much.
Yeah,
was it a one and done story?
Yeah, pretty much.
I like those when he does those.
I know, as do I. But then again, you know what? His best stories as of yet have been the big overarching series, at least two issues. I think that robot issue was two issues, and the Cracker Jack storyline was what, 3-4 issues?
That one might have been 5 or 6, actually. That might have been his longest storyline.
Yeah, so, he can do both. I mean, we've seen that he has a wide range in the sense that he can tell a one-off that's really good, which this was, at least in my opinion. It was a story of Nightmare, originally from, what's the name of the Superman character they have in Astro City?
It was Samaritan.
Yeah, I believe, is that the same Nightmare from the Samaritan storyline, Marvel?
Yeah, they mentioned that in the book. He was living inside him or something. Remember when he was sleeping, stuff would happen. I can't remember exactly what
He had all these nightmares, and it was really affecting the way he did things, and then he went to the scientist and he got them out. But the thing was, he was all separated, so I guess through just sheer willpower, he was able to reconstitute himself. And then I guess he was being brainwashed by this one supervillain. And he just assumed that was his lot in life, because when he first became the Nightmare, they showed his origin story as well. And they showed that, he hated people. But then after a while, he started questioning that. But before he could even, have some kind of existential crisis, he very quickly became controlled by this one guy. But then the Honor Guard came in, busted him. And Nightmare pretty much said the only reason why he was doing all these things because of the scientist. And they said he wanted to give an actual college try to being a good guy, and they said okay, we'll let you on the team, but obviously we're going to try to, you're on a temporal basis in the sense that, yeah, we'll put you on the team, but we're still going to, keep tabs on you, make sure you're on the level. So I thought it was a good story.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
It was a good redemption story. All right, in our final and second lightning round book, Wrath of the Eternal Warrior, which I kind of told Lura, I'm like, can we drop this book? I don't want to read this anymore. But you guys assured me that hopefully he'll be out of, the afterlife? Hell?
Hell. So this issue, I mean, every issue has felt the same. He's with his family in his heaven thing, paradise, and he leaves to go through hell. Now, the only thing we learned in this is he can die in his trip through hell because they said he's a living soul, which I guess is his immortality gimmick. He can die, but then he pops back up in his version of heaven, and then he has to leave again. And then he pops out where he died. So he was captured by demons, and he died again. But the thing is, every issue has shown him having the speech with his wife about how, oh, you shouldn't go, you should just stay here. However, this issue, for some reason, his wife completely flipped and said, oh, no, you have to go back.
There'll be peace when you're done. We need you to go out there and do this. And the reason why he kept seeing his family is because of the demons that were trying to impede him from going back to the land of the living. They were torturing him in the sense that they would kill him, then they'd know he would come back to life, and then they would torture him to death again.
Well, what they were specifically trying to do here was Lord Humongous.
Fine name, by the way.
Yeah, the head demon, who does not like Eternal Warrior because he keeps escaping, he brought in, like, all the hell people to come watch them, crush him once and for all. Like, look, this guy can't get away. He's defied us too many times, and we're going to show everyone. So he gathers everyone together, and, of course, Gilead, he broke his own hand to get out of his straps and brutally murdered all the demons. So everyone arrived just in time to see him escaping. And he finally gets up to the door that leads out of hell, and Lord Humongous is there. And Gillian talks to him. He's like, hey, can you just let me go? Like, I mean, you know how this is going to end. I always get out, and he's like, no, I can't do that. It's not the way I'm made. So they end the issue pretty much telling us he's going to get out, but yeah, we're going to see the big fight between him and Lord Humongous, which will be fine because the action in this book is very well done.
I can't wait for him to leave hell already. It's getting
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a somewhat interesting story, and it kind of puts over the character that he's willing to, you know, be tortured and die multiple times just to get out of hell because he knows that the world has good in it. That's all fine. It puts the character over. But we're going to be on our fourth issue of that now.
This needed two issues, tops.
Yeah, it should have been done in two issues. You could have done absolutely everything. There was some neat art in this book that I like when they had him strapped down and they're torturing him and they show like the rats and the rats are like coming up and licking up his blood.
Oh god, that was gross.
That was neat though.
It was neat, he says.
Well, you know, what am I gonna say about it?
It looked cool. The art was, I don't know.
Yeah, the art was good and it looked cool.
You know, while a horrific image, the art was well done.
It looks like hell. We saw hell in two books this week.
Yes.
And in this one, it also looked like hell. Yes. So.
We'll come back to that in a second, but with that said, that ends the lightning round, so let's go into this week's books. This week's books include Clean Room 4, Lucifer 2, Symmetry 2, Tokyo Ghost 5, Wolf 5, Ant-Man 4, Captain Marvel 1, Hercules 3, Miss Marvel 3, New Avengers 5, Silver Surfer 1, Star Wars 15, Starburn and Nightmask 2, Uncanny Humans 4, and Imperium 12. All right, as we were talking about very quickly before we were interrupted by the intro and my running down the books, our next book, Lucifer number 2, written by Holly Black, art by Lee Garbett.
Oh, I really like this, and I really like this because it reminds me so much of the last series.
Mm-hmm.
The heyday.
So the heyday of Vertigo. It Holly Black is great, and I've never read anything by her before, but she really feels, I just feel like she gets these characters in a very short amount of time. You understand who everyone is. I like that.
Yeah, Lucifer and Gabriel, they're continuing the quest to discover who killed God and who attacked Lucifer.
And in this issue, we found out they did, in fact, find God's body. So, Gabriel said he was – Lucifer had been damaged and he'd been hurt and they – you know, he's trying to get the thing out and it was a oily black stabby deal.
It was like a greasy blade, yeah.
Yeah, it was
and Gabriel said he found it in God, the same thing.
Yeah. So they go to hell. Whoa. To investigate.
Mm-hmm.
So they return to Lucifer discovers that, you know, everything has been taken over by the new queen of hell, Mazikeen.
Who is not there by choice from what they indicated. She was like nailed down to the throne of hell. He offered to get her out, and she said no because she's not happy with Lucifer because he left her.
That's not cool.
Didn't leave her in hell. Didn't leave her as the queen of hell. But they just indicated the Lilim have taken over hell, and the demons are not overly happy with this.
Also, there's a subplot going on. The rest of the world begins to succumb to the evil that Lucifer has brought to Earth. So they showed a woman in Oklahoma who finds a bottle of demons who manipulated her into violence and jealousy.
I can't remember which demon that is, but he played a part in Sandman.
Yeah, so the evil is spreading, and the world is becoming darker while Lucifer trying to find out who is behind it all.
That was actually a really good sub story. I enjoyed that a lot. It It was, you know, more like a horror comic, but that was fine. I really, really liked this book.
Yeah, this was a really good issue. I did like it. And also, I was excited for the next issue because they're going to go meet Dream.
Yeah, because, yeah, nice. We're going to get to see Dream. And they, you know, they indicated he – now, I'm interested to see this because I said I don't believe the Endless have been seen in the new DC universe. Now, this follows the old continuity, the pre-New 52 continuity, and it's in Vertigo, so that doesn't really matter. But there were strong indications in Sandman that Lucifer was directly tied into Morpheus's death. So, I mean, it was Loki in the end. Loki orchestrated everything, but he was tied into it. So I'm wondering if that's what he meant by, you know, the Lord of Dream doesn't forgive easily. But I want to see that because obviously I love those characters and I want to see what they do with it. I want to see if it's Daniel or not. I assume it will be because, Sandman Overture had current day stuff and it was Daniel.
Yeah. So I have to assume it's him.
Yeah. But I'm hyped for this and it's got, you know, it's the plot of we have to find out who killed God is going to continue to move forward. I'm interested to see if they just drag that out forever because this isn't a limited series or if they solve that and then we continue on to something else. I don't know, but I hope they drag it out for a while because it gives us an excuse to go to these different, you know, more obscure parts of the DC universe and see what's going on.
Yeah, I think going forward, their long-term plan is to continue with this because it is a great storyline. It's something, you know, it's a murder mystery. It's to a degree, a noir story in the sense that this thing can carry on, keep going on and on and on. And maybe that's their long-term plan. If this book needs to sell well, I have to imagine, you know, they do have an end in mind. So maybe after that, they may go somewhere else.
Well, if it follows the tradition of the books, this is coming out of, it'll have an end point. But, you know, the original Lucifer went 70, 80 issues, and Sandman did similar. So, yeah, they can keep this going for a while. Like it a lot.
It's a great idea. It's something that, you know, that obviously has legs, and they can keep going for as long as they, you know, as long as they feel like.
Mm-hmm. Good art, too.
Yes. All right. Since we're talking all things horror, let's talk Clean Room number 4, writer Gail Simone, artist by John Davis Hunt.
I like this as well.
That's another good one.
I haven't been totally too keen on this, the Clean Room, but I absolutely love this issue. It's contender for Book of the Week, in my opinion.
Yeah, the story opens in Norway, 15 years before the start of the series. It shows a younger Astrid Mueller. She's approaching some doctors named Dr. Hagen.
Some creepy doctor.
Yeah, he's some perverted, creepy doctor who seems to be able to see the sexual in every moment, literally.
That was great.
He's seeing stuff on a sexual level with orgies and shit like that, so where other people aren't. And from the context of the comic, you get the feeling that his scientific progress has his reputation has stalled because of this.
Yes.
But Astrid Mueller's, you know, she still wants him to join her organization.
I love the way she bribes him, too.
Yeah, she wants him to help her build a cloud buster, a form of sky cannon. Apparently to fight aliens, I'm guessing?
Or demons. We're not sure what the bad guy is.
Well, okay, well, anyways, Astrid and one of her assistants are stuck in a clean room with the infiltrator. And they're talking for 4 hours, and then, you know, he keeps telling her things. You know, he's spinning an obvious story that lasts and lasts and lasts, and it's kind of ridiculous because it's so clear that whatever it is inside of that guy, it's trying to manipulate her.
And it is the thing that ran her over when she was a kid.
Yes.
And he keeps screaming, let me out, let me out. And as we see later on in the book, I presume he wants to be let out the body so he can go possess more people.
And her stupid assistant shoots the guy in the head, killing him.
Because he was trying to get at her, and he was like, oh, I just shot him because he was trying to hurt you.
Yeah, but she said he wasn't going to do anything. And she's like, you idiot, you've ruined everything. Everything's going to go to shit now.
And there was awesome scene when she was still investigating him, and he's totally messing with her. He gets the body that he's possessed, and he starts digging around with the face, and he turns it upside down to where like the slit for the mouth is on the top of the forehead now. And then even as he tries to talk to her, he pierces the forehead of the skin forehead with the tongue. It's absolutely gruesome, but it's such a cool. It was a cool visual in the sense that like if you really like horror, it was a fantastic visual.
Yeah, he flipped his face around.
And then we got the other character, Chloe. They showed her. She came home to find her life in shambles. Her job let her go. Neighbors have been injured. You know, her well-to-do neighbors who try to help her out. They've been injured by the blue-skinned weirdo from the last issue. And then she goes into her home and what appears to be an alien. Kind of killed her.
The story is literally going all over the place.
Monster.
They haven't really established aliens, honestly, I think there's enough source material, or at least stuff where they can do with demons in the sense that they don't need to go in that crazy direction of aliens.
Well, but overall, we don't know what these things are.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
That's true. So they may not in fact be demons after all. They could just in fact be aliens. Yeah.
It was a weird looking thing.
Yeah, he said his only goal is to help Chloe kill herself. We don't know why. We don't know who sent them. We don't know much of anything.
Yeah, which is a thing with this book, but I mean, you know, that's the mystery. That's why you're reading.
Okay.
No, good issue.
Okay. Yep. As long as we're talking about all things weird and kind of like, you know, a mythological monster. Let's go with our next book, Wolf Number 5, writer Axe Cott, artist Lee, see if you can pronounce this, Leo Ridge.
Anita Christ has brought this book back to life for me.
In a big way, like before.
And made it very enjoyable.
Is it okay? I'm looking at the description on Comic List right here. It says new story arc.
Yeah, because the last story arc ended. We skipped ahead in time like 10
yeah,
years.
Yeah, okay. It felt like Anita was a lot older as well in the first issue.
They skipped ahead 10 years?
Around that, she was like 8, 9 in the first storyline. Yeah, she's 17 going on 18.
That's why when I first talked to you, I was like, I wasn't sure who this was. Because I'm like, it kind of seems like Anita, but she seems a lot older. And
there's a different artist, too.
That's true.
But the main thing was they made a couple of references to she's almost 18. Whatever bad, you know, the end of the world or whatever she's going to bring is apparently going to happen when she's 18. And she's 17 and a half-ish. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where there was a lot of moving parts. Some of the stuff I didn't know exactly what was going on.
We got backstory on Wolf Guy. She's looking for him,
mm-hmm.
And he's either hiding out. He had someone put him in a prison, a hide from her. But he was having flashbacks to his days as he was in some Middle Eastern war.
Mm-hmm.
And we know he's an immortal, but he became an immortal later. He hasn't been an immortal for a very long time. So this might be the story of how he got that way. And he's, you know, sexing up some kind of monster woman.
I saw we got the return of our Cthulhu guy.
Yeah, he's with Anita. He's banging the woman who's looking out for her.
Uh-huh.
Who's a vampire.
Because why not?
So he's sleeping with her, and Anita's there, you know, murdering and eating cows. Which she said is, you know, normal. Everybody does that. And, you know, they eat the cow after she slaughters it, so it's all good.
Yes.
Yeah, weird stuff in this book. A lot of gross imagery. But it still has the tone of the original, which is, there's all this weird shit going on, but all the people involved in it, really, they're pretty normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, she's a 17-year-old girl. Like, you know, she's writing in her diary through all this and, you know, questioning whether or not she might be a lesbian. But she doesn't really have any contact with the outside world, so I don't think that would matter much. But she very much is acting like a 17-year-old girl. She's a little rebellious, but she also, you know, occasionally has to go sacrifice a cow. And Cthulhu guy, you know.
Normal teenage stuff.
Yeah, he's there, you know, sitting down, looking at his phone, holding a joint with one of his tentacles, and speaking of the possible sexual things he can do with his tentacles. It's all just, I mean, that's the humor in the book. You've got all these monsters and this weird shit, but they're acting very human.
Yes.
That's the joke.
Yeah, the writer wasted no time in the sense that we had our opening thing with the Cthulhu guy in the sense that he was just treated like a normal person, and it's like, okay, that's what this book is going to be, huh?
Yeah. But it makes it for a more enjoyable read because you know the characters are weird, but you like them.
Yes.
Because they're normal. And I mean it's weird because she is the most serious part of the story since she's what it all hinges on, but it's kind of funny. And then you switch to Wolf, and his story is not as funny. They're going somewhere kind of dark with it, but we don't know exactly where it is yet. So that's why you keep reading.
Yes.
To find out.
In fact, that's what they talked about, because I thought, remember at the end of the last issue, they thought they killed off Wolf, and in this issue, they said they were going to find him. Not only was he still alive, but they were going to track him down and find him.
Yeah, we don't really even know why he's hiding from her, except, you know, unless he believes the bad shit's going to go down with her.
Yeah. All right, let's keep up the all things mythological talk, and let's talk this week's Hercules number 3, writer Dan Abnett, art by Luke Ross.
A little fun issue.
Yes.
So he's in the park talking to his one of these centaur looking things.
Yeah, he's fighting with the centaur things. Obviously, the centaurs are a little butthurt in the sense that they're so used to the way things were. Now that there's this new modern age, they feel like they're becoming less and less relevant.
But yeah. they're working together because they're facing the same type of enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did like where they were kind of making fun of him for using a gun. And he's like, well, when you fought me here, I would have used a sword. And when you fought me here, I would have used a longbow. And now I'm going to use a gun. And I thought, yeah, that makes sense. So at what point did Hercules stop moving with the times?
That's true. But then that's also the next part of this book. You know, he brings up the fact when he's talking to Gilgamesh that he used to drink all the time. So that could have been it. He just, you know, he started drinking. And he fell off the horse. He stopped caring about technology. And he just all cared about having a good time, so he just kept using the same old weapons.
And now he's trying to go off on Gilgamesh in this issue.
Yeah, everybody's like, "Oh, you just sitting around in your underwear, you bum."
All day, which then you know he gets Skyped or whatever on his tablet.
Yeah, he gets a phone call. Apparently he went to the hospital because remember Teresia had been hospitalized.
Yeah, so, the seer he was friends with.
Yeah, so Gilgamesh took a phone call. I guess somebody wanted to meet him, but apparently it was a trap because it was kind of obvious. And he was attacked by the usurper gods.
Yeah, they were trying to stop the usurper gods. So what it is Hercules found out that the ones killing all this old stuff are a new pantheon who is trying to come in, who they said they think might be based off current times. So I can't wait for, like, the social media god.
Yeah. And
the lolcat god or whatever we're going to get that comes in.
The dick pic god.
Yeah, they're trying to replace all the old gods. Now, the people who had Gilgamesh, what they said was they're like, well, we're going to use you to help us fight against the usurper gods. So technically, they are working with Hercules. They're just going a different way. And they needed the blood of an immortal warrior, which is Gilgamesh. So they're going to kill Gilgamesh. Now, also, Hercules was talking to the seer, and she said, listen, you're going to die. And he's like, well, that's fine. I've died before. I'm an immortal. I'll come back. I'll get better. And she's like, she basically said your immortality is running out.
Which is odd. But then even that he seemed kind of cool with in the sense that he's lived all these years. I'm sure at some point he wants some kind of, you know, rest.
I don't know if he really believes it either, though. So, yeah, we've got these, apparently, we now know our villains are new gods who are trying to get rid of all the old gods. Which is an interesting story.
Yes, maybe some gods need to go away, you know, like the cart and buggy god, maybe.
Now, this did tell me, we had questioned whether this was going to tie in with Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange.
It wouldn't be that far of a stretch in the sense that we're seeing like this, you know, this mysticism, this magic, this, you know, mythology kind of go away in the sense of.
Except they stated these guys are new gods trying to replace the old gods.
Oh, and you know that in Greek mythology, that's the Titanomachy, that's the their version of Ragnarok in Greek mythology. It's the new gods taking over the old gods. Remember the Titans?
The Zeus killed Kronos, and
yeah,
he was the kid of the Titans, and he killed the Titans, and replace them as the new gods. Yeah, I know a little bit about it.
So some new gods are supposed to be taking over these current ones?
Yeah, but what I was saying was they've set this up as this is apart from that. We had questioned whether or not this tied in where they're, you know, the old gods would be magic and therefore they're killing them all off along with what's going on in Doctor Strange. But they've kind of set that apart now, unless it is all the same thing. But the Doctor Strange villains, they seem to be like science fanatics who are killing all the magic stuff. In Scarlet Witch, it's more focused specifically on them killing witches. On this, it's a group of new gods who are trying to kill the old gods. So unless they draw it all together, these do seem to all be separate storylines.
Yes. Speaking of technology, let's talk our next book, Symmetry Number 2, writer Matt Hodkins, art by Raphael Lenzko.
I really liked this.
Yeah, I wasn't too on board with this series until the second issue. And I absolutely love it now. I like the direction that's going in the sense that it's these humans who were coddled their entire lives through technology, and now that technology is breaking down, they have no idea how to fend for themselves.
Yeah, and what they did was we had this string of books where they'd have interesting worlds and they'd you think, oh, that's really interesting, and then they never developed it. This book is now laid out. We're going to do nothing but develop this world and the characters in it and how they react to the changing of the world.
Mm-hmm.
They did a little more here. Like, they pointed out that, you know, all the people are they're all living in the same way, but they're kept separate. Like, there's apparently a group of Asians who have the same thing going on. And then there's a group of, I don't know if they're African or what, but there are black people
there's different,
who they have never seen before.
They bring up in this book the fact of the matter that the machines kept all the races apart in the sense that there were all these nations. And I guess the machines, through, I guess, looking at human history, decided, well, let's just keep all the races separate from each other.
Yeah, and then they'll get along better. And, you know, through the machines, they all spoke the same language, but they discovered in this, like, one of them was speaking Spanish, and they couldn't understand her. However, one of the elders who was there on the trip, she actually speaks Spanish, and they didn't get into why she can do that, except for the elders are the only ones who communicate with the elders of the other groups.
And then when they started talking to each other, this elder had a problem with it. She's like, no, don't talk to each other. There's a reason why you guys haven't talked to each other.
Yeah, she's like, you can't talk to them. Don't try to talk to them. I don't care if you could figure out the language. I don't want you figuring out the language. Go away. Now we cut to the current elders who are all together, and they're speaking to a machine who kind of runs the AI, and the machine is going through different ways of dealing with this. And the elders are saying, well, here's what we have to do. We're going to set all these people who've been – because they were – trying to figure out, you know, they've been separated from, they call it Reyna, which is the kind of AI hive thing that keeps everyone connected. They're like, we've seen this before when people get separated, you know, due to what they've learned, they can't reintegrate. They're always off. So you need to build like a separate community for them. It'll be, they actually use the phrase separate but equal. And they all have to go live there. They can't be brought back into the collective because they've seen too much. The robot pointed out when they said you got to go get them, well, some people might die, so you guys are going to have to handle this because, you know, one of our prime directives is we can't hurt people. They have gone to great pains, both through the art and the writing, to show you that the robots are not the bad guys here.
No, and in fact, when they bring up the fact that now that they're off their diet, that kind of sort of keeps them happy, that now that they're talking to each other and they're having all this withdrawal, they find that the fact of the matter is that humans are kind of violent. They hate, you know, they hate each other. And now that they're off their meds, you know, they start fighting with each other. And they specifically show that the robots are trying to keep them,
yeah,
you know,
they're
calm and at peace.
They show them holding – they were holding them apart, and that's all they're doing. Even when the people got a hold of a gun and they blew up one of the robots, this doesn't make the robots then attack the people. The robots are not allowed to hurt the people whatsoever. They cannot do that. They pointed out again, they were not behind this. They didn't separate the people. It was this massive solar flare that did it. They're already rebuilding it to fix everything. And they said only about 8,000 people were affected. But we also know, because the narration is coming from the future, that these people do something. In fact, the narrator, he had a kid with one of these, because he's, the narration is him talking to his son or daughter, and he had a kid with one of the people from this other, you know, group, like another race. He had a kid with one of them, and he's telling the story to his kid. We don't know if they live on a compound. We don't know if they turned against the, it would have been the other people who want to keep things the way they are. We don't know yet because we haven't seen that story, but I want to see where that's going to happen. And it's clever that they're doing it that way to tell you something did happen. But it builds logically. It gives you a little bit more information every issue so far. And I really, really like that. And I want to see where it's going. And therefore I'm going to continue reading this book.
Yeah, as am I. This, you know, I'm curious to see where this is going. If eventually this is going to deteriorate to war and humanity killing itself, or maybe there's some nefarious means through the elders or the technology, so.
Well, and the other thing is when the people all started fighting, I don't think it's because people are inherently bad. It's just that they pointed out when they got separated, this is the first time their emotions weren't controlled. They're not allowed to feel fear. They're not allowed to feel anxiety. And suddenly, without these drugs pumping into their system.
Oh, so in the sense that they're going from 0 to 100, in the sense that
exactly.
That's what happens when that, they come off these meds. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, that's why they all started fighting, because they suddenly, you know, if they get afraid, they've never in their entire lives ever been afraid. So how would you react to fear the first time you've ever felt it as an adult?
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Let's keep up that that theme of technology and humanity with Tokyo Ghost number 5, writer Rick Remender, art by Sean Murphy.
It's sad this is going on hiatus.
I know, you know what? I love
Free
this book.
Does.
I love this book so much that I take back most of what I said about Remender, and that this is complete almost 180 of the stuff that he was doing at Marvel. Like, this is really good, and I'm kind of sad to see it go away for a little bit.
Yeah, well, yeah, this was the end of book one, from what they said. Debbie, she's forced to defend a tech-free, resource-rich paradise that she and her boyfriend Teddy were originally sent to destroy. Unfortunately, she must do so at the odds of Teddy himself, who, through the machinations of the series, turns bad guy again. So
yeah, he's falling back into all of his old habits, like in the sense that he obviously gave himself up so he could be hardwired again, but at the same time, I sort of feel like he's being controlled on top of that as well.
Yeah, the Japanese woman who was running the place, remember, she was fatally wounded, so she made Debbie the leader,
mm-hmm.
but her husband was like, I don't care what she said, you're not
yeah, she
the leader.
Was, oh, she was hallucinating, she wasn't thinking properly, you know, she's in shock, she wasn't thinking with her mind, I don't care what she said, it doesn't hold any bearing with us, we're not going to let you call the shots anymore.
Yeah, apparently she gave her a sword, and we come to find out in the sword itself, in the handle, there's this thing that she needed to take. Apparently she was a living EMP. It runs through her body, you know, I guess the natural electricity the body produces or something.
Mm-hmm.
That makes her a living EMP. That's why they've been able to have that place, you know, the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
About technology. Apparently it was a experiment that the Japanese were doing, and they ended up just using it just to make the place, you know, technology free, more or less.
Yes.
So, the place, you know, Eden, it's basically burning along with her hopes for a normal life.
She's sad in the sense that she hopes, she's trying to talk to Eddie, or Teddy. She hopes that there's still some humanity left in him. There's still sort of the man that she loves still in there. But you can quickly see that in the sense that he's losing himself. He's going back to his old ways. And she's sort of contemplating the fact that she's got to move on with her life. She's all the fact that she, in the sense that I feel like she was in love with, in the sense that what he used to be. And now that he's become this, it's like she sort of hold on to the past.
Yeah, and they basically bombed and raided a place. They basically decimated the whole you know, that Eden that they had created.
Mm-hmm.
It ended on a big downer.
Well, yeah, I mean, up until recently, this book has been, you can kind of see it was going in a down trajectory, in the sense that, not in quality, but the sense that the story is going to be kind of a bummer going forward, and this was sort of like the deepest valley of that, in the sense that she's realized she's lost Teddy forever, and She's not only she lost that, but she's also lost Eden as well. Yeah. I don't think that that the name of Eden was, you know, necessarily without purpose. I think there was a reason for that.
Yeah, but then you see it at the end, that last panel. It's like you know, they've just been nuked and there's like basically nothing.
Yeah.
No, it ended on a downer, but yeah, this is comes back in April.
If I must read a downer, at least it'll be this book.
Oh yeah, it was a good issue. I liked it.
Okay, since we're talking downer, let's try to bring up the room a little bit and let's talk this week's Astonishing Ant-Man number 4, writer Nick Spencer, art by Ramon Rosanas.
Wait, what was this book?
Ant-Man, you fool.
Sorry. Yeah, Ant-Man's a funny book with a little bit of heart to it. Is what you took out of this. It's just this book is selling so bad that I just assume it's getting canceled, and I mean, it's good writing, but it's not good enough that it makes me.
And this sort of proves the rule that just because there's a movie on it doesn't mean it's necessarily gonna move really, you know, it's not gonna move issues really well.
I never thought that was the case, but
yeah, it's in fact that's largely not the case. Guardians of the Galaxy is the exception. I mean, Superman had a movie that did better than, you know, the last Superman movie, and it's not like Superman sales jumped up.
Yeah, but in the sense that the Marvel books, there's been, you know, in the sense that we see,
Captain America doesn't sell for shit.
Okay, but Doctor Strange coming out of nowhere, they're just going to give a series to Doctor Strange.
But the Doctor Strange movie isn't out yet. I think that's more they actually gave it a push this time. Doctor Strange hasn't had a comic for a long time, and Jason Aaron is kind of a name. I think that has more to do with it than the movie. They haven't even changed Doctor Strange to look like the actor or anything. It's,
well, the actor looks like he does in, like,
yeah, he does look.
But he doesn't look like that much different.
Well, they made the actor look more like the character, but I mean, they haven't changed. He doesn't look like Sherlock walking around. He still looks like Doctor Strange. And by the way, Doctor Strange looks fucking identical to Tony Stark. And I know they made jokes about that, but that's just kind of an issue I've always had with this character. They look so much alike. They have the same fucking facial hair, even.
facial hair bros.
God, the characters are kind of similar. They're both kind of dicks.
One's sort of been humble, and the other one's still kind of a dick.
Yes, Tony has never been humbled. He does fight foreign enemies, too. It's just, God, does he have an Iranian counterpart? I just want to see somebody threaten to humble him. That'd be so great. They need to get a comic or a wrestling fan to write that book.
which apparently Spencer needs, apparently is sort of in the sense that we had a Total Divas drop.
He did. He mentioned, well, that doesn't necessarily mean wrestling. That just means he's aware of Total Divas. And women, they watch the E! Network. So they very well could watch Total Divas. My wife lost interest in Total Divas very quickly.
Smart woman.
There's people who watch that show that don't watch wrestling. You'd be shocked.
Haven't we found that most of the people who watch that show don't watch wrestling?
I think my sister watched that show, and she hates wrestling, so it's weird. I thought something like that would be, you know, there would be limited appeal.
As someone who occasionally watches Total Divas, wrestling fans don't actually like Total Divas because we know all of it is bullshit. The thing with reality TV is you have to suspend your disbelief, and you shouldn't have to because it's reality
TV. Well, I think with reality TV, everybody knows what's up, that it's, you know, it's not on the level, just like pro wrestling.
Yeah, but this is so – yeah, but you don't want to watch a show, and because you watch another show, you know how much of it is bullshit. Like, you know, they say they're in this town, and you can look at it, and you know, wait, that match didn't happen in that town. It happened in this town. Or, you know, Natalia finding out the day of WrestleMania – or 2 days before WrestleMania that she's not going to be booked. Bitch, you haven't been on TV for 2 years. You knew you weren't going to be booked. Don't fake cry like you're not going to be. But Total Divas was in exactly one panel of this show, so I have talked far too much about it. That's how much happened in this fucking comic. He found out he's been stalking her, and she got upset.
Beetle is back in town. She's looking to hook up.
And that he did, even though he said he wasn't going to.
Put his helmet on again.
Yeah, that's their gimmick. And she apparently wore part of her costume, too. Maybe that's a superhero thing.
I don't know. So he's late for his security job. He's guarding Darla Deering. He's her security.
On the other hand, Grizzly and Machine Smith are also late because they were doing a conga.
Yeah.
They were in the conga line.
That was great.
Yeah. They're at a local charity, celebrity charity basketball competition. And he got tickets for his daughter because she likes basketball. So the game's interrupted by mind control villain The Voice, who orders everyone on the court and in the stands to go crazy. So Scott, Miss Thing, and the basketball star Jalen Diggs, they team up to calm the crowd and to stop The Voice, who's hired through the supervillain app Lackey by Dark Wormy's new boyfriend.
Paul Scheer, who is a real person, who really apparently wrote a comic that they informed us of.
Yes.
But he's afraid of ants, and he, however, claims he didn't know Lackey was a supervillain hiring app, and he got a Bed Bath & Beyond gift card every time he used it, and was screaming, it was a promotional item, as he was being taken away.
Yeah, so Cassie, she spotted Ant-Man in the fight. And, she confronts about everything, about getting her those tickets, about secretly spying.
Oh, that was the best part.
She got the tickets through the mail and he signed it the president of basketball. And she did not believe that most technical fouls did not entitle you to, basketball tickets. So I knew that wasn't an award.
The NBA commissioner or something?
Yeah. No, he actually
said the president of basketball.
I'm saying I wonder if that's what he got, the commissioner.
I don't know what.
But still, just like, and she fell for it initially, and then it's not until later that he let slip out that he borrowed the tickets. Like, she was ripping on him about his job, and he's like, blah, blah. She was like, blah, 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 and she's like, I hate your job. I mean, in the sense that job bought you those tickets. And then he very quickly stopped himself, but she figured it out.
Yeah.
And in this book as well, we got the reoccurring gimmick of Ant-Man bringing up the fact that he whooped Doom.
Yeah.
I
hope he keeps doing that.
He did tweet that he was in the comic. So he posted a screenshot. He apparently bought the physical book and then posted a screenshot of it, of his scene kissing Darla.
Nice. Good for him.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next book, Captain Marvel number one. Let's see if I can pull up the. Come on, comic list. You haven't let me down before. Actually, you've let me down several times.
Are you hanging up?
Tara Butters art, Chris Anka. A book that I didn't want to read, and I said this is going to be another instance where we try to give Captain Marvel a try, and I don't like it, and that's what happened in this issue.
Oh, because I read this and I liked it, but this is also the first Captain Marvel I've ever given a try.
I think Secret Wars I gave her a try, and I think a while back when they did a renumbering of Captain Marvel as well, I think me and Marvel gave it a try, and I can't get into the character. I can't get into the character.
People who listen to this show will have learned that I really like when a book has its own identity. And I can safely say that this book does not read like any other superhero book we read. Captain Marvel in this book was set up as the head of Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
Which is a big space station that is launched by Black Panther. It's connected to the Ultimates, which makes sense because she's a part of the Ultimates. It is the Earth's first line of defense. It also communicates does all the communications with alien races for the Earth. We don't exactly know how it's tied in. All of the former members of Alpha Flight are staffing Alpha Flight, the space station. So that still makes sense. Puck is a character in this book. Puck is a member of Alpha Flight. Sasquatch is a character. Sasquatch is a member of Alpha Flight. We haven't seen all of them, but presumably they're all there. So, Alpha Flight's death has been undone, apparently.
She's on a 2-year deployment to the space station, by the way.
Yeah, and Abigail Brand, who previously ran Sword no longer exists. Alpha Flight exists, and she is second in command in Alpha Flight. Although, since Captain Marvel just wants to punch things, they had a meeting with these aliens who they were meeting with to get rid of the space trash.
Yeah, it was waste management. They were price gouging them.
Yeah, she's sitting there and falling asleep pretty much. But it was revealed, you know, Abigail Brand gets very mad at her for not being professional, but she did bust out that, oh, so they're ripping us off on this. They're very offended by this. Some alien ships come to attack, and she uses this as an opportunity. Yay, I get to go out and punch stuff. And she flies out to fight it, and the reveal in the last pages on this mysterious ship that appeared was Captain Marvel's insignia. So is Captain Marvel the one who killed all the people in the ship because there are a bunch of skeletons and sent the ship here?
Most likely not.
Yeah, I imagine.
But they gave her her own, not shared with anyone, supporting cast. They gave her her own mission that no one else has. I find the character to be likable. I liked this issue.
It did sort of know some of my current favorite Marvel book, though, in the sense that they have Captain Marvel on the team, but she doesn't mention anything about the fact that she's on Ultimates.
Yeah, she in fact said she's not a part of a team right now. The only thing I can assume is since she was already in Ultimate, she's already in place as the leader of or the head of Alpha Flight. I can only assume that means this takes place before the first issue of Ultimates.
It could.
You keep thinking that.
I don't know why they would do that. Well, because she was showing up there in this, and in Ultimate, she's already running Alpha Flight. So yeah. that has to be what it is.
Yeah, he's right. She was already running Alpha Flight there. So, yeah, so she joined after she took command of this.
Yeah. Position. So, really, Marvel should have put this book out before Alpha Flight. I can only assume the reason they didn't was this book wasn't drawn or written before Alpha Flight.
I'm willing to forgive that. That I can let go. But I get the feeling they're going to completely no-sell the stuff they're doing in Ultimates.
I don't think they're going to. I think they need to just catch up.
Okay. And I like the fact that the book opened up with her punching, and then she got very defensive about her new job when she met Rocket. And Rocket, when she told her position to Rocket, and Rocket was like, so it's a desk job, right? She's like, no, I get to do all this cool, interesting stuff. I get to fight and whatnot. He's like, yeah, you keep telling yourself that.
Well, Rocket was also there stealing shit. Like,
and she was cool with it until, you know, he was taking a nuke. He's like,
yeah, he had a fucking he had a cart. And he said, you know, oh, the Guardians are just stopped off here to, you know, stock up before we leave. And she's like, oh, you're stocking up on one of our nukes?
No, she said, oh, by stocking you mean steal, right?
And he was like, well, yeah. So presumably she kept the nuke and let him go away with the other thing. She did quite we saw the first thing with Brand. She was actually talking to Puck. Puck's like going to be her go-to guy about why, you know, saying, oh, well, Brand hates me because, you know, I snaked in and took the job she wanted. And he revealed, no, actually, she was offered the job above you, but she turned it down. We don't know why she turned it down. We don't know why she doesn't like Captain Marvel, aside from the fact that she thinks Captain Marvel has no interest in actually running the station and just wants to fight.
But then Puck also mentioned that she's like that to everybody, you know.
Yeah, it's just her personality.
She's a hard ass, but then, you know, she's obviously saved Puck's life, so she's cool with everybody, but that's just the way she is. She's not a people person. That's what they told in this book. Abigail's just not a people person.
Yeah, and they, you know, they establish that she has a relationship with a War Machine who is rumored to be dying.
Yeah, that's the one character I'm looking at all the Marvel books, and like, not only is he not on a team, but nobody's doing anything with him.
He's not over.
There's plenty of characters that are not over, all
well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's gonna be a character. Well, is he gonna be a character in this though? Because he was there for her send off to go up to the space station for 2 years. He's obviously not gonna be stationed there, so I don't even know if he's gonna be a strong character in this. They didn't reveal that. They kind of said goodbye to each other temporarily in this issue, so we don't even know that. So her love interest might not be a part of this book.
Okay. Speaking of characters who aren't over, New Avengers number 5, writer Al Ewing, art by Geraldo Sandoval.
We almost lightning rounded this. I can't read this book anymore. This book makes me cry because it has a place where we've got
the trash can.
All new, all different is the book with the established characters and then the new characters. This Avengers team is, we've been set up as the only Avengers team that has money, it has funding, it has somewhat of a focus behind it. It's got basically a bunch of all new characters, or at least not A-list characters running it, And it's played up almost entirely for laughs, and it shouldn't be, because it's dealing with a character who has been established in the past, probably going evil, because he's been infected by this evil space wizard from his incarnation. No, that's the thing. The plot of this book is more interesting than the execution, because he's far too comedy in this. And what he should be doing is, you're taking these jobber characters like Wiccan and Hulkling and Squirrel Girl, and he could be doing more with it, but he's not. He's making jokes about how squirrels are fucking colorblind. So when Squirrel Girl, who for some reason they trusted to set up this, what was it, a time machine?
A time machine, yeah.
Yeah, it was a time machine. They trust Squirrel Girl to do this, and she has Tippy Toes go fucking plug in the cords, but Tippy Toes is colorblind, so she couldn't match up the fucking green and red cords to the correct place, which caused it to fuck up, which is what allowed these Avengers from the future to come in. But fuck, this is such a goofy, it's all just so goofy, and I can't deal with it. If I felt it was going to get more serious, and Evil Reed was going to be a serious villain, I'd be fine with it and I'd read this. But since it's goofy and I feel like they're shitting on Evil Reed and they're shitting on all these characters by making them goofy and telling them you can't take it seriously, anything in the background, I have no confidence they're going to deal with. And therefore, I don't want to cover this book anymore.
Here's what's going to happen since we have a track record of this. It's going to be bad for a long time and then it's going to get good. And then we're going to put it over and then we're going to read it and be like, we should have just stuck with it. But
yeah, the thing is, it's got every chance to be good, and no one else is doing anything with any of these characters. When I say I'm not going to read it, I am actually still going to read this on my own time. I will tell you guys if it gets better, but I'm not going to fucking cover this on the show anymore because I don't want to give it any attention because I hate what he's doing with it.
Yeah, tell me when Evil Reed comes back.
This is my least favorite Avengers book.
Yeah, I know. Previously, this was the book that I thought had a lot of promise, and Uncanny was the shithole. Uncanny is actually building itself into something good. This, which has fucking everything I like, it's got new characters, it's got a different gimmick, it's different from the other Avengers books, but it sucks. It's not good. The writing isn't even bad, it's just I don't like what the writer is doing. And it's frustrating because this should be good, this should be different. And it's not. It's another fucking comedy book from Marvel.
Yeah. Which.
Damn them.
Yeah, in the sense that I like that they have one or two comedy books that I like, but I get the feeling we're getting more and more of them. We're getting Hellcat, and we're getting, the one I do like is Howard the Duck, but then Squirrel Girl I gave up on. There's too many comedy books.
There are, and this shouldn't be a comedy book because, I mean, they're dealing with an established character possibly going evil. But it's funny, and it shouldn't be funny. And that bugs me. Damn you, Marvel.
Because we talked about damn you to hell.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't help but think of JR.
Damn you to hell. Squirrel Girl's a Jezebel. Yeah,
you just stole the words out of my mouth.
Ah, son of a...
The only way this comic will be saved is if for the next issue we get a cameo from Stone Cold! Stone Cold!
And he goes and beats somebody up and JR can be like, as God's my witness, he is broken in half.
Comic Conversation listeners, I promise we will read this again if it gets good, because I'm going to take the bullet and keep reading this shit pile. But... damn it, this could be good and it's not. And it's all the writer's fault.
There's nothing wrong with a normal book that has a lot of funny, you know, moments. Like Ant-Man.
But they could do stuff. They could use this book to build up these characters and they're not going to do it because they're all fucking a bunch of jokesters.
Like Ant-Man's a funny book, but it's a serious book that has a lot of funny moments. But it's not all put up for laughs.
But I think that's to the detriment of that book too. I think I'm coming to terms with the fact that I don't like a lot of comedy.
Neither do I. In the sense
unless
that
explicitly
I like,
a comedy book, I'm okay with it. Even Howard the Duck had an issue that had heart. That one with Shockett and Linda.
Yeah.
Whose names are Shockett and Linda. Was an incredible one-issue story that really worked, even though it was in the context of a comedy book. It still worked. Whereas this book... it's dealing with some big stories and it's got a chance to do something, and it's just not. It's just throwing it all away. And the art's not that good either.
No, no, it's not. It took a serious nosedive in this issue. I kind of like the art, but this specific issue I didn't much care for.
Yeah, so.
You know what's a good book that has a lot of humor in it, but is not necessarily focused on all comedy? Silver Surfer. Writer Dan Slott, art Mike Allred. Now that's an example of a book that, you know, it obviously has a direction, it's telling a story, but it has a lot of cute instances where it's fun. And it's funny.
Did you notice in this book that Silver Surfer is becoming more of a three-dimensional character? Instead of just being, I'm always serious all the time, Silver Surfer acted like a person. And we're led to believe that's all down to the influence from Dawn,
mm-hmm.
who largely is what this book focused on, was Dawn and her relationship with her family. And how she's changing and they're changing too. They're going through different things. Her twin sister got married and pregnant, and they were going over all the stuff Dawn missed when she was out in space.
She missed her birthday. She missed Christmas, Thanksgiving. She
missed Halloween. So they had a birthday, Christmas, Halloween.
Hybrid
holiday to welcome her back. And it was a very cute story. And I liked Surfer in it. I liked Dawn in it. I liked Dawn's family. I like every character in this comic.
Aliens who were, you know, they came to Earth and they wanted to take, you know, one of our most valuable resources, I guess, which I guess was creative stuff.
Culture and imagination.
Art, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Madman was in this issue.
That was awesome. Yeah, I saw that.
One of the characters was reading an issue of Madman.
And had a poster of Madman, yeah.
Which, so Marvel allowing Allred to include his own character in this as an advertisement, which is very neat because he is not a Marvel character. So good on Marvel for letting him do that.
Well, he's Mike Allred.
It wasn't important. It was just they showed the comic, but still, they showed the comic.
And it wasn't off. It was clearly Madman.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, it's drawn by Allred and it's colored by his freaking wife, so.
You know what this issue reminded me of? It was like that one episode of Futurama where the giant brain jumps around from book to book and Fry has to make him leave for no reason.
I've never seen that. I've only seen one episode of Futurama.
Oh, you're missing out.
You know, this book is like, he's bringing up, oh, this reminded me of Futurama, and everybody else says, oh, this is just like Doctor Who. Well, I never watch Futurama, and I don't watch Doctor Who, so I don't get any of that. I still like it. I just don't get that, you know, influence.
It's not that the influence, it's just that the aliens in this issue, you know, they're stealing the culture and imagination and stuff like that. Well, there was a similar plot in an episode of Futurama. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
And also, in the issue, Ben Grimm crashes on some planet and meets somebody called the Keeper. As Dawn and Surfer go off to do some more adventures after they stop the the aliens in such a creative manner.
That was great. Thanks to Dawn.
Yeah.
In a way that only Dawn could do, exactly. In the sense that the aliens, they took on all the personas of all these, you know, protagonists. And she realized, you know what? If the only way I can think to actually stop these aliens is if I put myself in peril. So she climbs up in this one part of the spaceship and she jumps off. And the guy who was the Scarecrow immediately came to her rescue because they were all protagonists.
And this Keeper, by the way, is apparently going to be our new heel for the time period. And he was going to make Ben Grimm his herald, which Silver Surfer will not be cool with because he does not like people being heralds for cosmic beings. Obviously.
Am I the only one that noticed that the aliens looked an awful lot like the Vine?
No, I noticed that too. However, I read this right after reading Imperium.
Which is our next book, Imperium number 12, writer Joshua Dysart, art by C-A-F-U, Safo.
Yeah, I thought this was gonna finish this storyline, and I thought it did finish this storyline.
Sort of did, I think there's a message to this. There was no real resolution to the war.
Right, and there never is going to be. In fact, in this, they showed that, I guess the lead, Vine People's Liberation Army figure, she had struck a deal with Harada where she sort of said, you know, oh, I got the whole Vine fleet out there and they're going to kill you. And he kind of thought she indicated he didn't really believe her and it was bullshit.
Yeah.
Because they laid out in this book, Harada doesn't know this, but the Vine does not give a shit about the Vine plantlings on this planet. They do not care. Earth is not important to them. And they just kind of, you know, gave him Lord Vine as just, you know, here's the thing. No, shut up. You know, we don't care about you redneck jerk off.
And we got some more stuff with Lord Vine. Apparently he had, you know, he's been brought back to life before and killed.
But he doesn't remember any of his previous lives.
Yeah, he can evolve. He was living in the forest for a couple of years and
all peaceful, and he rose above his murderous instincts that had been put into him. But then Harada killed him and stole him and used him for his own. It was another issue where even though Imperium was all about Harada, Harada is a giant dick, and you're not supposed to like him. The only reason he made peace, they said in this, is because he couldn't fight a war on two fronts, and Rising Spirit had the Harbinger Wars, which, you know, we didn't read that.
Another instance of them bringing that up.
Yes, Harbinger Wars was the first big, Valiant crossover they did. We didn't read it because we didn't read Harbinger. We didn't even start reading Valiant until right after that storyline ended. So we don't know what happened in it, but they did tell us in this issue it was Project Rising Spirit going after Harada. And the reason he made peace with these – well, he didn't make peace. He basically signed a treaty, an end to hostilities treaty, because he couldn't fight both of them at the same time. They put back the status quo in this issue where in the end he said, you know, okay, I won't go after you guys. But if you guys get in the way of my shit, I'm gonna come for you.
The main leader, her daughter died too in this issue.
Yeah, but she still went back to try to make some peace with him.
Yeah, yeah, and also one of her guys apparently was an evil capitalist who was trying to use them.
Well, it wasn't so much that he was an evil capitalist; he was a greed. They didn't push it that way. He was just a really greedy guy and let that get in the way of the greater good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Marvel's making a joke there. That was not the story in this issue.
Well, they ended up killing him anyways.
Killing him really brutally. He fucking got completely ripped apart. His head and all his limbs got ripped up.
That was kind of brutal, yeah.
Yeah. And... you know, Lord Vine didn't get to kill Harada because Lord Vine found out that if he kills Harada...
he will die, yeah.
He will die, yeah, because he only lives until his mission is complete. So it is in his best interest for Harada to live, yeah, because otherwise he will die. Even though he wants to cut and tear.
Nice.
Or no, it was rip and tear, I think. Was the old Doom comic, which is very famous on the internet.
Doom comic?
Yeah, you don't know about that?
No, I don't.
Rip and tear, rip and tear. There was this ridiculous Doom comic that was released to go along with, I think, Doom 2. But this was the early 90s when it came out. Mm-hmm. So it was like the most 90s comic ever. Like everyone had big pouches and... well, have you ever played Doom?
No.
Okay, well... Doom doesn't really have a lot of story,
mm-hmm.
although Luro has read all four of the Doom novels.
Nerd. Yes,
there were four Doom. No, I read them because I was a fucking English nerd. I'm like, what's the worst fucking book I can read? Oh my god, there are Doom novels. They had jack all to do with the comic because or the video game because the video game had no story, but they developed a comic for it. And in the comic, there's a item in the game that makes you go all berserker rage. Mm-hmm. You know, the screen tints red, and you run around and punch people to death. That's what you do. It gives you super melee power, and you just run around hitting guys, and you can't feel any power. Well, this entire comic took place while the main character was under the influences of this thing. And one of the things he said was, rip and tear, rip and tear.
Okay, so to go from rip and tear to, what was it, blast and crunch, right?
He said, Lord Vine said a lot of things.
No, I'm talking about our next book, Starbrand and Nightmask.
Oh, that?
Yeah, what were the two? One of them was Crunch, I know for sure.
Crunch and Boom?
There we go.
Because it was Nitro and Graviton.
There we go.
Who we found out are being influenced by greater evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know what the greater evil is.
We here's the thing with this. The guy who's writing Star Brand and Nightmass is the guy who did Gargoyles.
Who's Greg Wiseman.
Yeah, the thing Gargoyles did was, even though it was a kid's story, which this is drawn kind of like a kid's story, was it had these really big storylines that, you know, went all through the ages and all over the world. Apparently, that's what this guy does, because that's what this comic is doing.
Yes, and that artist is Dominique Stenton.
And the art is effective.
Yeah, we got some about the white, what do they call it, the white...
The white event, which is what kicked off the new universe, and is what kicked off Starbrand and Nightmask. But in this, we found out another planet had a white event, so it has its own Nightmask.
And it was a Kree, wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, it was. It was a Kree planet. And they got their own Nightmask, so that means they're going to have their own Starbrand. They didn't necessarily position them as villains. They just showed that going on. We know whoever the villain is someone who mind-controlled these supervillains to kill Starbrand Nightmask. Now, they failed, but
yeah, they transported him to the Arctic, and Starbrand apparently put him in, like, amber, like it was like Jurassic Park.
The living death from...
Yeah, and Nightmask was a little... He was a little bothered by this, because the whole point of him sending Starbrand to school was so he could reconnect with humanity. However, Starbrand pretty much said, yeah, they might be dead, whatever.
No, in his defense, he did say, oh, am I supposed to feel sorry for the people that wanted to blow up a college and wanted to kill him?
That's not really a defense, though, because he's supposed to be a superhero, and superheroes aren't supposed to go around not giving a shit about people.
Nightmare said, even that if that's true, I'm disturbed by the fact that you don't care that you might have killed him.
Right. So, and Starbrand, who presents himself as this kind of, you know, goofy... You know, he has to eat all the time because of how much power he uses. He's just, oh, I'm going to order the entire menu. And, oh, Nightmask, you revealed that you've hacked the school's computers. Well, he claims he didn't hack them. He talked to the
computer. Requested it.
Yeah, and requested it. Gives him a bunch of money. And he's like, well, can you request that it gives me the unlimited meal ticket so I can eat whatever I want? So he's presented as kind of goofy, and, you know, he wants to bang his RA. But he doesn't seem to really give a shit about humanity at all, which is what Nightmask is worried about. So this book is, while the art looks like it's kind of, you know, light and fun, it's actually dealing with some really heavy stuff with its characters, which is clever.
But the art never feels like it's out of place. It always seems like it molds to whatever, you know, aspect of the story they're trying to tell.
Yes, and I know this book isn't selling incredibly well, but I hope it's selling well enough to continue, because this guy's obviously got a long-form story he wants to tell, and thus far he's been very effective at it, because he handles characters really well.
At the end, S.H.I.E.L.D. is in the Arctic trying to recover the bodies of Graviton Nitro, and apparently they got attacked by somebody.
Yeah, which might be the guy who was mind-controlling them. Yeah. Whoever our big villain is. This is a really good comic. Having to deal with these two characters who even Hickman didn't do a whole lot with.
No.
But he, in the first issue, he gave a very clear path for this book to follow. He's shown us these characters' powers. He's shown us their place in the world. By the way, we had an Ultimate Universe connection in this, because Kong is in this issue. He's one of the students at the college.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I caught that. It was from Ultimate Spider-Man. He was a member.
Yeah, he was one of Spider-Man's buddies. Peter Parker's buddies. Ultimate Peter Parker.
Yeah, when you're talking Spider-Man, you have to be it to make sure who you're talking about.
It was Ultimate. He was one of Ultimate Peter Parker's. Well, he eventually became one of his friends. He was originally a dick. But he was just here. He's at school. He's one of the, he's on the line for their football team. So he's on a football scholarship in this, but he just kind of popped in. That's not a huge deal. They're just showing you that after Secret Wars, other things did carry over aside from Miles and Genki and Evil Reed.
Yes. All right.
Also, apparently for some reason, Good Reed decided,
oh, let's move this guy over there too. That'll be fun.
we're gonna get a lot of that in the future. The
Molecule Man had sliced them up, and I guess Reed put them back together.
Maybe.
Because I remember when Molecule Man had like more or less killed him.
Yes. But he's not dead.
No, he's not dead.
Yeah.
And apparently they mentioned how stuff in the 616 universe works differently than from his universe.
Oh, they said that, and that was actually the one interesting thing in New Avengers.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. I got that.
When Evil Reed said, you know, in my world, everything's less... I don't know if he said it's less fantastic.
Yeah.
Then he smiled because he's evil.
Yeah.
Oh, so, man, we probably should have mentioned that. Yeah. Because that was kind of interesting. But again, that was another thing in New Avengers where they could have done something cool and they don't.
That's why I say the book's going to get good later on. And we're going to kind of regret dropping it. But until it gets good, until we hear otherwise, yeah. I'm comfortable dropping it.
But Starbrand and Nightmask is good.
Yes.
So this book continues to be good. New Avengers continues to be crap, even if they have one interesting line of dialogue in it. And that also means that Evil Reed also remembers
Secret Wars. Mm-hmm.
So,
well, not necessarily, because remember,
he remembers he comes from a different world.
Yeah, but maybe I don't know if he remembers actual Secret Wars.
Well, yeah, but he knows he's from a different universe that is apparently no longer existing.
Yeah.
Okay. Since we're talking all things post Secret Wars, let's talk about a book that actually deals, or that one of the focal points is something that happens post Secret Wars, or all the things that led in Secret Wars. Uncanny Inhumans, number 4, writer Charles Soule, art by Steve McNiven.
Better-ish.
It was, but I really like All New Inhumans more than this book.
Ah, see, now I'm the exception. I like Uncanny Humans a lot better. In fact, if it weren't for Ultimates, this would be probably my favorite Marvel book.
And you are the exception, because I've been looking around online, and most people like All New Inhumans more than... Well, most people hate the Inhumans and wish they would all die, and the X-Men would take their rightful place. But of the people who read both books, they tend to like All New Inhumans more for most of the reasons I do. This is more deeply rooted into Inhuman lore and everything the characters have done before, and All New Inhumans has totally gotten away with that and more deals with their current place in the Marvel U, whereas this is more the classic stuff, although Uhura... Blackagar, Boltagon, and Medusa's kid was all kinds of hard gore in this issue.
He came out of the cocoon, he got his powers.
And he was kind of a badass.
Yeah, he's able to make copies of himself or other people.
Which can fight on their own, but yeah, he could also have his little ghost go inside and take over.
As we saw in the last issue when he took over Johnny Storm.
Yeah.
So this issue was dealing with this, you know, post what happened in the last issue, as what happens in most comic books, but in the sense that they showed the sun dying, but they went back in time to a point previously where the sun had not died.
And tried to explain to him what was going on. Kang was there.
Yeah, he's like, we had an agreement. You didn't honor your word. And also Uhura was like, you know, Kang did really take care of me. You know, it's not like he was this really bad figure for.
But this was, was before he had, you know, went back in time and killed all the Inhumans.
Yeah, because they told him all this stuff was going to happen, and he's like, no, I would never do all that. And to make sure this never happened to him, he mind controlled Kang and told him, you know, if you ever fuck with the Inhumans again, you're going to kill yourself.
Yes, go back in time and fix everything you did. And if you ever attempt to do anything with the Inhumans again, you will kill yourself.
Yeah. So, which is pretty damn hardcore, which, you know, the story recognized. But apparently they have gotten him back now, and everything's going to be fine?
Question mark?
A big fight ensued, and Kang gave his big speech about how Medusa and Black Bolt are failures as parents, and that they failed him. And Uhura's like, yeah, they failed me 1,000 times, but they're my parents. And then, you know, he possessed Kang and told him to fix the damage he's done to the Inhumans, and if he ever feels the need to hurt Inhumans, he should kill himself.
But he didn't kill him, he just told him that, so apparently Kang will now no longer mess with the Inhumans, and that storyline is done.
And it also seemed odd that, you know, the son was cool with what happened with Medusa, but he still seems to hold a grudge against Black Bolt.
Yeah, and
he said mother was probably the one who sent you, didn't he? Basically, he feels that the mom cares more for him than the dad.
Yes. Well, nobody likes Black Bolt. So that's kind of the thing. Now,
he did blow up their capital, and he did fake his death, so there's plenty not to like.
He traded their son to Kang.
Yeah, and I mean, the gimmick of this book, as opposed to all, like I said, all new Inhumans is dealing with everything, you know, the Inhumans' place in the world currently. Whereas this is more dealing with the Inhuman royal family and what they're doing right now. So it feels like a completely different book, which it should, because you have to justify the fact that there's two different books. Now, given the current hate towards everything Inhuman among many comic fans...
Even if there's only two books.
Yeah, now, we, as people who read comics, are apparently the only ones who do not care, and we just kind of like this book, and we kind of want to see what they're going to do with the Inhumans. We didn't mind this. I do think, from the perspective of someone who absolutely hates the Inhumans, you're going to hate this book even more, because this is the book that is just, you know, telling you the Inhumans are a thing, and all their shit and their history is important, and if you don't care about it, damn it, that's what we're going to deal with in this issue, so fuck you. In fact, I read in several places that everybody else is like, well, the interesting characters are Reader and Iso, which... Fair enough. Reader
I would,
is.
I would take issue with that, but whatever.
Well, I do think Reader is an interesting character who has interesting powers, even though his power is, I can do anything about 3 times a day until I get a nappy nap. That's pretty much his power, but I will give them that he is a cool character design. He's kind of a cool character. I don't find Iso to be particularly interesting, but.
No, not at all.
You know, we can give her some time, but I do like Reader, but I also like Medusa, and I also like Black Bolt, and I think they put some strides in the storyline to do something with their kid. Still haven't done jack shit with Triton, even though he was standing around in this issue and occasionally talked, but now we're going to go back to present day and deal with this family, and they're very dysfunctional.
Before we move on, I want to highlight a line of dialogue. That literally you pointed out. Yeah, that was amazing.
And because it was hilarious, because he's like, you can't go around, you know, don't tell the original, because they were dealing with, they were in original Attila, and the guy who is the one who made the Terrigen Mist and is the one who's figuring out you can do stuff with the Terrigen Mist. And he's like, don't tell him anything about the future because you'll mess with the timeline. And he's like, Kang, you do that shit all the time. And he's like, yeah, but I'm Kang.
He's like, yes, for I am Kang. And I imagine if it wasn't part of the book, but I have to imagine this was playing in the background after that. Because, you know, he's a thug.
Kang is, in fact, a thug.
All right. Let's keep up the gimmick with going back in time or telling, you know, things that already have happened or unfolded in the past. Let's talk Star Wars 15, writer Jason Aaron, art by, and this is the guy who we got to put over this week, Mike Mayhew.
Incredible art.
This art was amazing and so much better than John Cassidy.
Honestly, I love all the artists at Marvel. But this is the new big dog on campus in the sense that his art is amazing. Like, if you haven't already, go out of your way to look at the preview. Or you know what? Just if you can take our word for it, buy this book. The art is gorgeous.
This book anyway, dude, you don't need to. It's not like, oh man, we got to put over Star Wars.
Well, you know,
people aren't reading Star Wars.
This has got to be the best selling book every month to month, right? It has to be, right?
It always sells good because it's called Star Wars.
It sells like what, 150,000 every month?
Let's look up last month's numbers while you guys do the recap.
Star Wars is always one of their best selling books.
It's always in the top five, yeah.
This was another let's fill in the story of what is Obi-Wan doing, you know, between the prequels and when Luke goes and finds him in the desert.
Apparently, this is 2 years after the events that happened in Star Wars issue 7. Remember they had that other flashback issue?
This was something else that Luke probably read about in Obi-Wan's diary.
I have to imagine.
You know, this is why Obi-Wan apparently kind of took a back seat in what Obi-Wan was doing. And what he was doing was continually being in the shadows but kind of helping Luke's life out. We did get to see Luke possibly, you know, flying through Beggar's Canyon and blasting Womp Rats. We didn't get to see him blast any Womp Rats, but we did get to see him on his first fly through said canyon, and he crashed the ship. Jobber. Even though Obi-Wan was kind of hanging back saying, use the Force.
Didn't he just kind of like damage it but not actually crash it?
Yeah, he slammed part of it into the side of the canyon, and Uncle Owen told him, you ain't ever flying shit again. And he's like, but come on, Uncle Owen, I'll fix it. And Obi-Wan, who is friendly with the Jawas because he protected them from the Tusken Raiders, told them, yo, go give this kid all these parts he needs to fix it. And Luke is super hyped, but Uncle Owen figured out what was going on. And took all the parts and brought them back to Obi-Wan and said, you don't ever fuck with this kid again because you fucked up his dad and the kid's already enough like his dad.
Here's the best part. He mentioned that Anakin was dead.
Oh, yeah.
See? Ah.
But he doesn't know.
it was his truth from a different point of view.
Obi doesn't know. Obi doesn't know. Don't tell Obi.
Actually, so, Obi's the only one that knows. It's Owen doesn't know.
You know, Obi-Wan was talking to, he was talking to Qui-Gon Jinn in this, but I'm not sure if he's actually talking to him.
It came off more of that he was just praying.
Well, however, we know that his master has the Force powers and can make a Force ghost because they showed it in the movie. During the special editions when Lucas remade the movies. I don't know if that's still canon, but he was there chilling with, you know, Anakin and Yoda. So, there you go.
Yeah. And then obviously, because Obi-Wan had done all the stuff to protect Uncle Owen and Luke, that we had the end of this book where this guy who wants to go after the one family who hasn't been paying their fair share of the water tax, and it was some Wookiee. Who was the name of this Wookiee, or is it really of importance?
Blackagar Boltagon.
Yes.
It was something like that, though. It kind of sounded like his name. It doesn't matter what his name is, because we know it's going to happen. Uncle Owen has told Obi-Wan to leave them alone, but obviously Obi-Wan is the one who saves them from this guy, and eventually we will get that story, not... I don't believe in the next issue because I think Leia is on the cover of the next issue.
Oh, okay. Well, the only reason why they're being targeted is because of Obi-Wan.
The character's name is a Black Chrysanthemum.
I told you it's kind of like Blackagar Boltagon.
It's a bit of a stretch. I mean, it does have that black in there, but
it's got black in the name, so maybe he's an Inhuman. The Inhumans are now infecting the Star Wars.
Oh my god, have you seen that story from Stan Lee? He wants even though he's Stan Lee and he has no say what's going on, he says, Star Wars and Marvel are gonna do a crossover in the movies.
Hey, here it is.
What is?
The start of the crossover, because This Wookiee is an Inhuman, damn it. He's in the Boltagon family.
Do you ever see that pitch from Community where Patton Oswalt teases how they could do a crossover?
No.
Where Thanos gets the Infinity Gauntlet and one of the gems is for reality?
Why would he do that?
Huh?
Why would? Well, he would do it for sales, obviously, but...
But in the sense because he would have the reality gem, he could cross over Star Wars. Here's the thing. They could have done it in Secret Wars. Remember I told you they had one of those secret worlds, and I'm like, oh, they could do like a...
They could do the Star Wars world. Doom stuck it in there, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Missed opportunities. Yeah, no. This Wookiee is not, in fact, a part of the Bolt family, the Boltagon family, royal family.
That Wookiee may have not been an Inhuman, but you know who was or who is? Miss Marvel.
Which is our next book, Miss Marvel number 3.
Writer G. Willow Wilson, art by, let's see if I can pronounce this, Takeshi Miyagawa.
This finished the first storyline.
Mm-hmm.
It ended with Miss Marvel declaring that she needs her buddies.
Yes.
Bruno, who is now a confirmed super genius.
She went to Bruno's girlfriend for help, to help him out. Remember, they were all being mind-controlled by some weird protein thing that they mentioned?
Yeah. Bruno's girlfriend revealed that Bruno's got this friend who he told her he was in love with forever, but she doesn't think that she likes her. She never said Kamala, but she does not think she likes her, even though she's kind of cool and she's, you know, attractive, but not annoyingly so. Or however she put it. So she would like to be her friend, but she doesn't want to be her friend. And Miss Marvel explained to her that, well, you know, maybe she just needs some time. And, you know, this whole thing with her best friend, and she's got a new boyfriend, it might take some time, blah, blah, blah. All I'm saying is, it's not just DC. A small mask will hide your identity from everyone, much in the same way a little S-curl in your hair and some glasses.
That's not true, because remember, her mom figured it out, because her mom is the smartest mom in the history of superheroes. Well,
right, her mom is the only one who can figure out that her daughter is a superhero. Well, but as I pointed out, Aunt May did always know that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Oh, we've been over this.
Yeah, we've been over it. That wasn't canon.
One version of Aunt May always knew that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
You mean the one that wasn't actually her?
Yes. Damn it. I like to think characters aren't idiots, but they are.
Yes, this is comic books we're dealing with, so.
Before all that happened and Miss Marvel decided she needed friends. Yeah, but
in the Ultimate Universe, they did seem to, like, figure it out pretty easily a lot of the time.
Well, because that world was more realistic, as Evil Reed said.
And a lot of good it did them, now they're dead.
Well, it was less fantastic, though, and that's why because apparently a part of being fantastic is you cannot figure out simple things. But in this,
that's cute.
She teamed, okay, so apparently Bruno, who was mind controlled by the evil stuff.
Hydra.
By evil Hydra.
Yeah, Hydra.
Yeah, he had, before that, figured out a way to stop it using proteins or whatever. And he gave this information to Mike, who had a flash drive,
yes,
which allowed her to get into Bruno's super safe cloud-based storage area where he kept this information. And they used a 3D printer to print off a bunch of this stuff in liquid form, which is bullshit science, because 3D printers cannot print off
maybe
liquid.
The 3D printers printed the squirt bottles, and that it was enough for just them to be in the squirt bottles. I don't know. I'm trying to make sense out of this nonsense.
It's bullshit science. You cannot do it, but that's okay.
It's comic book science.
Because it's comic books. And they also explained that Miss Marvel done got some training in her powers.
As Reed established, this world is more fantastic.
Well, yeah. Which allows her to shrink and grow at rapid rates, which is what she can do now.
Yeah, she's been training with the Avengers, so.
Yeah. So she's better at using her powers. Yeah. So she beat that dude up, and then they, her and Mike use their spray bottles to spray everyone with this thing Bruno developed, and therefore stop the mind control. But even though she stopped all these people, Kamala's buddy and all these other people, they still do not like Miss Marvel because she was on the advertisements for the evil Hydra people to come in and do all kinds of bad stuff to Jersey City.
Even though she said that she wasn't involved, they didn't get her permission, people were still skeptical. I think even one person said, we want to see your financial records.
Tax records. That was awesome. Yeah, that's what he said. We want to see your tax records.
Those are your financial records.
Yeah, what the hell does that have to do with this?
We want transparency.
But they want transparency from their only era.
From their masked, you know, superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Their masked vigilantes.
It was once again another cute and fun issue of Miss Marvel that did allow us to say, you know what? Mike and Bruno are, she needs them.
They are for railroad, not for play.
Yeah, she needs friends, is what she decided.
And going back to my original theory, this is another comic that has several instances where it's funny, but at the end of the day, it's a regular book and it has serious storylines.
Yes.
And they're things of consequence. I think that's the problem with a lot of comedy books. You can just, you know, you can just offhandedly, like, whatever, it doesn't matter. None of this stuff matters, where it's, you can still have stuff in books like this where there's funny stuff, but, you know, the stuff that happens in this book matters.
Because G. Willow Wilson is a better writer than the douchebag who writes New Avengers.
All right. That's going to be a wrap up this week's book. Let's move on to our next segment, Book of the Week. Everything is awesome.
Feeling all time I had all my life.
Guys, your picks for Book of the Week.
I think I will go with Lucifer.
Ooh.
And I was going to say, even though I put over Captain Marvel, I also absolutely loved Lucifer and have to give it my Book of the Week.
Okay, and my Book of the Week is going to be Tokyo Ghost.
Okay.
All right.
Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books. Alright, let's wrap this sumbitch up. What do we have for next week's books?
Day after day.
I can tell your blood sugar's getting kind of low, right?
Insane. I know, my blood sugar always goes low at the end, and then I start singing, is that Richard Marx? Or
Let's look this up while you pull a comic.
Karl Marx?
Yes, no, Richard. It's Richard Marx. You had it right the first time.
Yeah, okay, I'm looking. Art Ops number 4.
Art Ops, got it.
Art Ops number 4.
Marvel, you may want to pull comic lists up too.
Jack, number 3 of 6.
Oh, so I thought it was only going on 4 issues. Okay, so 6 is kind of enough.
Well, maybe they extend it.
Hooray!
Justice League 3001.
Justice League.
Which is a 100% comedy book. That in the last issue had some seriousness.
Okay. That may be the exception to the rule.
Justice League of America number 7, the end of the storyline, they say in the solicitation.
Huh.
Finally.
Finally, this storyline's been good, but it's going to end. I was actually going to say it kind of feels like, what, they're going to end it already?
Yeah, it seems kind of rushed. Like, they set up a lot of things. They have a lot of, you know, they're juggling a lot of balls, and they're just going to all be settled in one issue.
Remember that one issue that had nothing to do with the storyline?
Well, yeah.
And
except for that, and Lois and Clark. So we are reading all kinds of DC next week.
Yeah, so for all the retractors that say we don't cover enough DC, huh? We got like, what, 3 mainline DC books and we have 2 Vertigo books.
Justice League of America is so not mainline because it's, yeah, but whatever. I'm still looking.
Black Magic number 4.
Ooh, cool.
I did not even see that.
Because you, sir, are almost incapacitated.
Deadly class for us.
Thank you, Marvel. I'm going to go with what Marvel says now. Leroy, if you want to just, you know, call the night, by all means.
Oh, no. The reason I hadn't seen it was because I am going slow and hadn't gotten out.
That's why I'm... Hey.
You know what's coming out, but I don't think we're reading it, is Jupiter Circle. You guys dropped that, right?
I gave it up.
That's, that's volume 2, number 3. So, yeah, that's the new issue.
Are you reading it?
I don't know.
Let's look at this week's book, or next week's books, and then maybe.
Say no, because you got a lot of books. Because we also have Ringside is coming out.
Are you guys still reading Monstrous? Because that comes out also.
Monstrous?
I thought you were the Ringside? Guy that liked Monstrous Marvel.
I stopped reading Monstrous. I don't care about it anymore.
I still like it.
Okay, so we got Ringside and Saga.
Okay, Saga. Mm-hmm.
We got a new number 1 that is a 1 of 6. Is called Prophet for 4.
No. Okay.
I don't want to read any more minis. I just
We hate being jerked around. We get a great story and then it ends.
Yeah. Well, apparently this is a continuation of something else. So.
So we'll definitely not read that. And we have all new, all different Avengers.
Ooh, cool! Quick turnaround.
All new Inhumans.
Your favorite Inhumans book?
Uh-huh. Amazing Spider-Man.
What's Jack watching?
A Minecraft video.
Okay.
He was just playing Minecraft, now he's watching Minecraft video. Carnage number 4, which, is that lightning round? Because I ain't reading it.
I don't know. Marvel, do you read All New Carnage?
He doesn't.
No.
I'll put that in my question mark list with Jupiter Circle.
All new Carnage. It's just Carnage, dude. Daredevil.
Daredevil? All new Daredevil. All Marvel books are all new, all different.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder why Daredevil didn't get all new, because it is in fact all new. New city, new stuff. Extraordinary X-Men number 3.
Actually, it's number 6. Number 3 is a reprint.
Oh, my bad. Extraordinary X-Men, though. We're reading that.
Yeah, Carnage and Jupiter Circle looking less and less likely we're going to read that.
Oh, we did drop Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Canon, number 10, which, by the way, I listened to Freddie Prinze Jr. on Jericho's podcast, and he does Canon's voice in the cartoon. And he did not pronounce it canon.
How did he pronounce it?
I do not remember, but he did not pronounce it canon. Pronounce it canon, or however we used to say it. He pronounced it a different way. And I'm just going to say, however he pronounced it is probably how you say it, because he is his voice actor.
No.
Just saying.
No. I'm in the opinion that we, a comic book podcast, know how things are pronounced, and a guy who's on the mainline show and has his name pronounced on a regular basis doesn't know how it's pronounced.
Nope. Old Man Logan, number 1. Hey, it's a Jeff Lemire solo series. And his solo series.
I just assumed because I heard the name, I thought it was going to be Bendis, but if Lemire's writing it, okay, I'm on board. I'm on board.
It's got a Tim Bradstreet hip hop variant. Because they're doing all those classic rap albums cover.
Okay, let's move on before you see something that embarrasses us.
I wasn't going to say anything racist. Spider-Man 2099.
Sure you weren't.
Spider-Man 2099. I will, again, be reading Spider-Woman because it's good.
Okay. I like that we had to stop you before you said anything about the hip-hop variants.
I wasn't going to say anything. I will be Lightning. Oh, wait, no, I don't do that. Never mind.
What was it?
Squirrel Girl. I'm going to read it, but we're not going to talk about it. Bloodshot Reborn.
Hooray!
800 variant covers.
Jeez Louise. A hip-hop variant?
Ooh, Jeff Lemire is doing a cover. Let me see if I can see this. I didn't know he could draw.
Neither did I.
Oh. That's cute.
Is it tragic, or can he actually draw?
No, it's like, it looks like a notebook sketch, like in your school, you know.
That could be good or bad. That really.
Cute. It's got blood squirt on it. And ooh, cool. Faith, number 1 of 4.
Cause she's fat!
Yeah, about fat girl.
I'm sorry.
She's all about that bass. About that bass.
How many books?
Let's see. Let me count these up. Sorry, I was trying to look at that cover.
It's Faith. So many that you are not going to read those two books that you put a question mark.
Yeah,
by.
You're probably right. Let's see. Let's put bullets with this. It is 21. That's not that bad. But with that said, I'm not going to read Carnage and Jupiter Circle. I don't know. We'll see. I may get myself into.
So does that mean it's 19?
No, I said those are without those two books. So
heavy week, but not as heavy as it has been.
Yeah, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks ago? We were having, 25, nearly 30 books?
Yeah, but heavy week.
20, no, actually 20 is usually the average.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Whatever.
All right, that's gonna wrap up this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.
I love you.
Hey, Marvel.
Yes.
In the sense, in the sense, in the sense, in the sense, in the sense.